Welcome to the Human Beat. There's a standing saying in our area that if you haven't lived here for 40 or 50 years, you're a newcomer. Our guests today could use that same line, but change the time frame to 9,000 or 10,000 years. We're talking with Diane Collier, Chairman, and Dick Bash, Vice Chairman of the Clatsop Nehalem Confederated Tribes. Can you, Dick, start us out by telling us a little bit about the tribe's history, how long they've been here, what part of the area they inhabited, and how big the tribe was?
Our territory ranged from what is now Point Adams, out that way, Clatsop Spit, in up the mouth of the Columbia River towards Astoria, included Tongue Point. And from there it went to the Saddle Mountain, thereabouts, and then went back west to around Cannon Beach. Now, the interesting thing about that is that the Nehalem tribe, their territory covers north of Tillamook Head, seaside area, and goes down to Point Lookout. So we have a overlap of territory that includes southern part of Seaside and Cannon Beach. And in those areas, the two tribes lived side by side. The villages were bilingual. Both the Tillamook Nehalem language, which is a Salish, Coast Salish language, was spoken, but also the Clatsop dialect of the Chinookan language was spoken. They were so close and they interacted so frequently, and they didn't combine cultures. They kept their languages and their separate rituals, but they lived in the same villages. You know, and that to me is just really interesting. Because of this relationship that we had for centuries, it was not only is it in our oral histories, but the first documentation of our cultures noted how we were two different tribes living together. It was mentioned in the journals. Franz Boas and all of the official anthropologists talk about that, how it was obvious that this is something that had been going on for several centuries. It wasn't a new relationship. And so that's what we're carrying on today, is the Clatsop Nehalem Confederated Tribes. The name is, we're hoping to keep the two names alive for future generations, but also to keep our relationships alive, because it's those relationships that are so important, that were so important and are so important today. The settlers moved in to this area, and I guess just imagine being on a ship for months, traveling to a new destination. You didn't know what it was going to be like. And you get off the boat here, and it's heaven. Mm-hmm. You know, it was heaven for us, but for these new settlers who had no idea where they were heading, the thought of getting off the boat here, all they had to do was turn the soil over out on Clatsop Plains, for example, and, you know, up came crops. They could graze their cattle just off a little bit from the prairies, from the plains out there, or timber, salmon run up the streams. You know, I mean, it is absolutely a piece of cake. Yeah, it got cold and wet in the winter, but there was shelter, there was food. Mm-hmm. But what for us, what there wasn't a treaty. These new settlers built fences, built homes, built farms, said, this is mine, that's not mine, but that's yours. Lines were drawn in the prairie or the plains. We weren't allowed to trespass onto other people's property to go and to do our usual hunting or our usual and accustomed fishing. We were pushed out of the prime land And so we took refuge where we could. And then, and in some cases, we moved across the river to Bay Center for those of us who had strong relationships with our Chinook cousins, our relatives across the river. A lot of us went to live at Bay Center and still have relationships there, and they are enrolled in the Chinook tribe. Many of us headed south towards Nehalem, Garibaldi, and took refuge in a place that was called Hobsonville, which no longer exists. It's across the bay from Garibaldi. And it was totally a village, a little town even, made up of Clatsop and Nehalem people. And it was a refuge because it was all tribal people. People were all related some sort. But it was also, I guess it was our version of a reservation, because it was a place that was attacked. People from Garibaldi would take the boat. The KKK was real strong in that area. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know that. But there were was a lot of KKK activity in the Garibaldi region, and that was those people would take out their frustrations on our people, mm-hmm. and would go over in hoods over to Hobsonville, and would do some real nasty things, as you can imagine, and that little village, that little town, ceased to exist after 1940s, I would imagine, or 1950s, and so we just sort of split up. Some of us moved to Tillamook, some of us moved to Grand Ronde, Siletz, and some of our cousins still live on those reservations. They were able to enroll there and establish homes in that community. I use the example of the KKK really to talk about, I mean, really to see how much of an extreme it really went to. Mm-hmm. But there was far lesser extremes. It wasn't just the KKK. Many of the citizens of that time, you know, who were nothing like the KKK, still worked for the benefit of their family and at the expense of the Clatsop and the Nehalem people. Mm-hmm. I always like to point out, in Seaside, down near the golf course, there was a couple areas that were old tribal cemeteries, and then another part in Seaside. And when people moved in and started building homes, started logging, farming, when non-Indians started moving in, a lot of graves were unearthed. A lot of them were disturbed. They would plow, and they would just plow up bones, mm-hmm. and keep on plowing. And for us, traditionally, we just didn't touch or move or do anything with human remains. That wasn't something we would do. Once they were placed, once the grieving was over, that was it. We just would never touch. Mm-hmm. So there was a time when some of the good folks in the Seaside that had settled there and the remaining Clatsop and Nehalem residents, they decided to, out of respect for their ancestors, for the ancestors of the Indian people, they went around and they gathered up all of the bones from the fields, from out back of people's houses and gardens. They went around and they gathered up all of the bones and they relocated. There's a place in Seaside that it's a known place to us, that all of those bones were reburied. And you know, it was only done through the goodness of some of those settlers who were just horrified at what was being done to the graves of our people. And so out of respect for us as a people, those settlers did that, and then some of our people just decided to touch the bones and move, you know, do it. It's a very special place for many of us, and we're doing what we can to make sure it isn't disturbed anymore. So I didn't want to say that all of the settlers were bad.
Well, we've talked a little bit about the relationship between the Clatsops and the tribes to the south. What about the relationship between the Clatsops and their cousins, as you described them, the Chinooks? Was there a lot of interaction back and forth across the river to the north?
I guess as the settling started of the area, all of us were feeling the trauma of it. The Clatsop, the Nehalem, the Lower Chinook, the Willapas, the Wakayakums, the Kathlamets, all were feeling the effects of this new time that was coming. And we, as I said, many of us went down towards Garibaldi, towards that area. But there were strong relationships with Chinook people across the river. We spoke a real similar language. It was so similar that there was no problem in understanding Clatsop over Chinook. But their village in the Willapa Bay and then up in Bay Center, that was like their Garibaldi, like their Hobsonville. And so many of our people live there, and I have worked with the Chinooks for 35 years, been very close to many of the family there, and know many of them are of Clatsop descent as well as Chinook. But I also have cousins who moved to Quinault instead of Bay Center, mm-hmm. and Siletz, and to Grand Ronde.
So they're intermarried into different tribes then?
Yeah, we many of us did enroll or move to the area that became Grand Ronde Reservation, as well as Siletz. And so there are Clatsop Nehalem people, descendants, enrolled in Siletz, Grand Ronde, Quinault, Chehalis, Chinook. And as a matter of fact, in 2005, when the government returned the canoe to us that Lewis and Clark had stolen back in the day, that log came from the Quinault Reservation, and we were able to fund it through a grant from the National Park Service. And a Quinault tribal member, canoe carver, came down, and his ancestry also goes back to Clatsop. So it was like him coming home to build a canoe mm-hmm. down here. Mm-hmm. And so it was through that whole process, through our family who now resides at Quinault coming down here to help us out, we were able to have a potlatch that we hadn't had in several hundred years to name and to actually bring a spirit to life of our canoe, which is named Dragonfly. So it was a whole huge process that came to be by result of our relatives coming from Quinault, from the bicentennial of Lewis and Clark expedition, and by the restoring of our canoe. And since then, we have formed a canoe family that has gone on a canoe journey this last year, went from Celilo Falls to Fort Vancouver by canoe, and then we trailered to Nea Bay, and went from Nea Bay to Port Angeles to Port Townsend, to Whidbey Island to Swinomish Reservation, 400 and something miles on the water. It's, and with this canoe journey, we are running into family everywhere. And it's just been wonderful. Mm. And I really urge people to go to YouTube and just type in Clatsop Nehalem canoe journey, and it'll take you there. And there's about a 10-minute little video that shows us all along the way, and it's just beautiful. It's beautiful, and you can hear the laughter.
It's just
great.
Well, that kind of brings us to the present, and I guess, Diane, you're the chair of the Clatsop Nehalem Confederated Tribes. What are the issues that the tribe is working on today? What are the big things that you would like to accomplish for the Clatsop tribe?
I think one of our major things is trying to get our enrollment up and all in perfect order. Mm-hmm. And let everybody know that we're still here.
There were a number of tribes whose treaties were not ratified, or a few who didn't even negotiate a treaty. About 30 to 35 years ago, the Department of Interior set up a process that tribes could jump through these hoops that went on for miles. Mm-hmm. And then if they were very lucky, at the end of that process, they would get a piece of paper that would say they are federally recognized by the United States government. What that means is those tribes are eligible for federal grants, entitlements. They become a sovereign government. It's a government-to-government relationship with the federal government. And groups like Clatsop Nehalem, Chinook, other non-recognized tribes do not have that government-to-government relationship as a sovereign to a sovereign. Although many of us consider that we still have our Aboriginal rights because our property was never ceded over. There was no agreement.
And certainly no compensation.
Yeah, no compensation. What we are in a real unique situation, of course, in that we don't have a treaty, so we're non-recognized, but we're different because in 1954, the Eisenhower administration decided to see what would happen if we terminated tribes. And so there was the Oregon Indian Termination Bill. It was an act of Congress which terminated tribes in Oregon, except for Warm Springs and Umatilla, I believe, were the only two who were not terminated. Mm-hmm. And so that just meant that the trust property, the reservation, the programs that had been developed were just all over. I mean, they were over. The properties were sold, the reservations were sold for pennies on a dollar. And so that was devastating to the communities in Oregon, the tribal communities. But then in the 70s, some of the tribes started to get restored. That's different than recognition. Mm-hmm. Recognition is for tribes who've never been recognized. However, the Clatsop and Nehalem, in that act of Congress, it listed us. So even though we didn't have a treaty and we're not a recognized tribe, we were listed in the termination bill.
The irony is going back further than that. When you read the journals of Lewis and Clark, which is a pretty clear record of what was going on at the time, the Clatsops and the Chinooks are both mentioned clearly in those journals over and over and over again, and yet neither tribe is recognized.
You know, it's a very frustrating process. The only way we can become a recognized or a restored tribe is through an act of Congress. Hmm. So that is the route that we are pursuing, and that we are gathering documentation, working with people to organize all of our history, all of the documents, so that we can present this case that will end up probably weighing 2,000 pounds.
Yeah. As a practical matter, what would that, if that could be accomplished, if recognition happened, what practical effect would that have on the descendants of the Clatsop people?
For both the Clatsop and Nehalem people, it would provide us an opportunity to do many things that we and our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents have always wanted. Joe Scoville, who is our hereditary chief, he is 89 years old. He has always said, I mean, he's 89, and he has always said, and he still says to this day, that he wants the tribe recognized so that the memories and the stories and the culture of his grandparents and great-grandparents won't be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a tribe of Clatsop and Nehalem people, I think many people in this community know of us one way or another. And I think most people who have worked with us know that we do want to be restored. We want that ability to negotiate with the federal government for programs or services, and we want to be able to have that recognition as a sovereign nation so that we can do that, so that we can provide educational programs, because we have, for the last 10 plus years, education has been our number one priority, really. I mean, we have worked with the national parks in a video, to produce a video that would be shown at national parks that would be basically Lewis and Clark through Indian eyes, you know, the eyes of the Clatsop and the Nehalem people and the Chinook people. We have produced a book on about Dragonfly, or Clatsop Nehalem canoe. We have done programs throughout schools in the region to educate people, because it's the history of our grandparents and great-grandparents, but there's a lot that all of us living today can get from sitting back and thinking about the way life used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when you look out these windows and you see the sun shining and the trees and the forest, to think about it through our grandparents who used to live out there. So there's a lot of territory, a lot of area around here that could really be restored. Forest land, the tribe would like to work towards doing that. People have said, well, yes, but you're going to want to take over Fort Stevens, or you're going to want to take over. No, we don't want to take over Fort Stevens, or we don't want to take over Ecola State Park. We don't, you know, everyone's doing a good job for the most part, of taking care of the beautiful coast here. It's the places who have that have not been taken care of, the places that need to be given a little TLC. That really, at least that's my two cents, that the tribe would really have a role in. You know, this was ours. This is our folks. If you look at the mural in Seaside, you know, that's, I think everybody, no matter what their background, would like to crawl inside that mural for a while and live on the beaches the way it looks there. You know, no matter how small we appear to others, whether we're a small tribe, a non-recognized tribe, it's who we are inside as individuals and how we see ourselves. You know, we see ourselves as a tribe. You know, we know what's important to us. Our grandparents have told us what's important, and we just stick to it. And, you know, luckily, some of our kids are picking that up. Our daughter Charlotte, who is now 19, who didn't like what she saw out at Fort Clatsop at the theater there when she was 12. She didn't like the way Indians were portrayed. She had a lot to do with the reason the new video came about. Well, now she's a sophomore at Pacific University, an anthropology major. And, you know, her mom is Puyallup and Coeur d'Alene, and I'm Clatsop and Nehalem, and Charlotte has a pretty solid sense of identity, you might say. Well, being a Native American girl with a major in anthropology, she's been really determined to learn everything she can, and so that she can be a great Indian anthropologist. Education has really been going back 3, 4, 5 generations. Celie Ost, who was the daughter of Gobeway, and her husband and family moved to Clatsop Plains, moved back to Clatsop Plains from French Prairie, and they set up a school, a missionary and a school. And ever since then, just almost every generation in our family has had a teacher pop up here or there.
And we've been talking with Diane Collier, who is the chairman, and Dick Bash, the vice chairman, of the Clatsop Nehalem Confederated Tribes. And you've been listening to The Human Beat. You can hear The Human Beat on the third Monday of each month. It broadcasts at 9:30 a.m. on KMUN 91.9 and on KTCB in Tillamook 89.5. The Human Beat is also heard at 8:30 p.m. on KCPB 90.9 FM. And this is Coast Community Radio, streaming live on the web at coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.